All right, so we're ready for NTI Acts chapter 13. And on the Kindle version, that begins on page 237. Where is it in the paper book? 237 as well. All right, perfect. All right, here we go. NTI Acts chapter 13. When you have set aside your fear and your desire for the world, I will call you to follow a path with me. I have said this will seem to be a unique path. I have said that the path will be given to you one step at a time. And I have shown you that the path comes to you through your own willingness to walk the path with me. So when your calling comes and seems to begin to lead you in a direction that is unknown to you, rejoice and celebrate. Know that you are being led into the unknown through your own desire and willingness by your one Holy Spirit. So a couple of things in this paragraph that are kind of interesting that I think are important. One is that, Holy Spirit says that it will be a unique path. Your path of awakening will be a unique path. I think that's very important, actually, because I think one thing that happens on the spiritual path, a large number of people, maybe the majority, but I don't know that for a fact, instead of finding their own path, they try to copy somebody else's. You know, like lots of Buddhists, I think, for example, copy Buddha's path. You know, lots of Advaita Vandana people copy Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta's path. I suppose people try to copy Jesus's path, but I don't use his example because I don't think we actually really know his path. I don't think that information was passed down as clearly, so it's a little harder to copy him. But what happens is people will find someone that they think awakened, and then they'll say, "What did you do?" And then they try doing that instead of going in and finding their own guidance. And another thing that I think is very interesting is if you look at Jesus and Buddha and Ramana and Peace Pilgrim and anybody else you can find, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, and you talk to them about how they reached awakening, they don't have the same story. So it seems for them it happened the way it happened for them. And so I think that probably what we should each do is just realize that the way that I awaken is completely unique to me. It's going to be unlike any other awakening that's ever happened before or any other awakening that follows. It's like a fingerprint. And not attempt to copy anyone. I think the best thing that we can all do is attempt to go within and find our own path, you know, and follow our path. And I think it's great that we get together and we share. And I think it's great that we encourage each other and maybe sometimes help each other discern between confusion and clarity. But I think we should each expect to be led differently and find the way that we're led. A Course in Miracles says something similar about how the paths are highly individualized, is the words it uses, highly individualized. So we don't need to compare ourselves to anyone else. If our path is going to be completely unique, it's a waste of time to compare myself to someone else and where they are and what they're doing and what they experience, you know, because I'm going to be different, right?
Yeah. And you never know, you know, where you are competing. You can't, that's not something you can't compare.
No, the only thing that's going to happen if I compare is some kind of an ego reaction. You know, whether I'm going to think I'm not as advanced as you or more advanced than you. Either way, it's ego that comes out of that.
Yeah. Well, how comforting that is, because I was just thinking, you know, how we're always ready to compare or judge or see how we stand with others. And in that, we can let go of all that because everybody is on their own.
Everybody's on their own. Right. Yeah, so
you don't have to judge or compare or measure up.
No. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And in fact, if you look at Byron Katie, as far as I know, unless there's a part of her story that has never reached my ears, but I think I know her story pretty well, she wasn't on any spiritual path and didn't make any spiritual progress. You know, she was like as low as she'd ever gone is what happened to her, right? She was an angry mother. I think she may have even used the word mean once when talking about herself. I think she may have said mean, and her children hated her. She was an angry mother, And somehow, I don't remember the details, I have a lousy memory, but somehow she ended up in what we call a halfway house, and she had severe depression, and she really was aware of her belief in her unworthiness, but she didn't think it was a belief. She was just really aware of her unworthiness, was her experience, and she felt so unworthy that she didn't even think she was worthy enough to sleep on the bed in her room, so she slept on the floor. And then what happened one day is she was woken up out of sleep when a cockroach crawled across her foot. But she says she woke up in two ways. She woke up out of sleep and she woke up. And this was that without, in this lifetime, anything, you know. So, and then you hear other people that make the gradual progress. They go through all the stages and then they awaken. So, you know, to look at people as awakening stories and say, that's how it's supposed to happen, that's what I'm supposed to do, that's just, how can you do that? There aren't any two stories alike.
What would you say to someone that makes absolutely no noticeable progress in multiple years? it's a heartbreaker.
Yeah, no, I would say that you don't know that you're not making progress. I would say that, you know, who, you know, what in you is trying to judge the progress? How do you know what progress looks like? You know, you just don't know. You know, for example, a minor comparison. When I first read A Course in Miracles, I didn't understand it. I mean, I knew the words were English, but they literally made no sense. And I ended up putting A Course in Miracles in a drawer. I studied Peace Pilgrim. I spent maybe 3 months doing meditation. But for the most part, over the next 7 to 9 years, I just forgot about it. I didn't do anything, right? And then this feeling started coming to pull out the Course and look at it again. And when I pulled out the Course and looked at it again, I read it and understood it perfectly, with great clarity, you know, very easily. So what happened? You know, how can you explain what happened in that 7 to 9 years? See, sometimes the progress is background. And we can't see the progress. So I don't know that people really know that. And probably the mind that's telling them they're not making any progress, that's just the ego trying to keep them in a state of, you know, of upset.
Mine's a little bit different than that. I started reading it, but like you said, it's hard to make sense out of it and everything. But there was something in me that wanted to keep reading it. Every time I read it, I would read for a while, and then 2 or 3 weeks would go by, and I'd put it aside and everything, and then I something always kept me going back, and I was halfway through the book, and I didn't know what I was reading. But when I was reading other books, something would be in the book that would say, well, that's what I read back then, and that's kind of the way I made sense out of it, was through
other things
differently in other books. And that, so I was retaining that stuff, even though it didn't seem like it was.
Because you recognized it somewhere else, mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to the next paragraph. Paragraph 4 to 12. The ego is still within the mind as you begin walking with me, because the ancient desire to be your own will has not left you fully as yet. Expect challenges on the path with me. Expect the desire for a separate and unique will to seek for command and control. Expect self-attack and fear. Be prepared for confusing thoughts in times of doubt. And remember what you truly want. For what you truly want must be your guiding light, because you are free. Remember your freedom and hold up your light. All shadows must step aside and let you pass, for nothing can be an obstacle to the desire and true will of the Son of God. I remember as a scribe really appreciating this paragraph, because I felt like Holy Spirit was being very, very honest with me. You know, that as I continued to follow this spiritual path, it wasn't going to be all la-la land, you know. That there were going to be some very, very difficult times. You know, there were going to be times when my mind was going to be attacking me. There were going to be times when there was a lot of fear, a lot of confusion, a lot of doubt. But then Spirit also gave me the key to keep me going forward through all of this, which was just to remember what I truly want. Remember that I really want awakening, or I really want to know myself. When I first started out, I used to say I wanted to be only love. That was what inspired me. Now I usually say I want to awaken. But at different times, the language that helped me remember what I wanted was a little different. It changed throughout the time. But by remembering what I really want, I was always able to move through any period that came about. I was nothing could make me quit, I guess is what I'm going to say. Nothing could make me quit. So, but I was very, very grateful that Spirit was honest with me that this spiritual path is a difficult path. It's not a path of la-la and bliss. You know, la-la and bliss may be the end, but that's not the path. There's a lot of, you know, like I said before we started the recording, in my experience, ego doesn't make it easy. And that's true. Yeah. So verses 13 to 15, with true will as your guiding light and trust as your torch, you shall be led to people and situations that are helpful. You may not at first know why you are led there, but as you wait in trust and patience, it shall be made clear. So one thing from the very first paragraph, which I forgot to go back and talk about, we talked about it was a unique path. I didn't talk about the second important thing, which is that you are going to be led on this path one step at a time, which means that you don't know usually why you're being led to a certain place, why you're in a certain, you know, doing a certain thing. You only know that you feel the prompt to go there. You know, to this day, I don't really know exactly why I'm in Pueblo. You know, there was never a neon sign that said, go to Pueblo and here's why. Now, certainly there are things that have happened. I mean, I've met all of you all, you know, and I love Pueblo and, you know, all these kinds of things. But to say that I really know why I'm here, it's not true. I don't know why I'm here. I only know that I was guided to come and I came. Sometimes we get a glimpse into why, but sometimes we don't get a glimpse into why. But, you know, what Spirit is saying is that every place that you're led, everything you do, is going to be helpful to you in your awakening. And that's really all you need to know. And, you know, he says, if you wait in trust and patience, it will be made clear. Maybe 10 years from now, I'll know why I came to Pueblo. You know, maybe 10 years you'll say, oh, I think it's probably because of this. You know, I can look at other things and I can see why they were important. Like when I was guided to leave my job, I realize now that that's because I had a whole lot of trust in Regina. And Regina's ability to, you know, make a living and support herself, and that trust needed to be undone. Because you can't really have trust in yourself like that and let go of self too. So there are some things I understand, you know, about my path. I can look back and I have clarity on. But usually the clarity comes with the 20/20 hindsight. When we're moving forward, we don't know why guidance is taking us there. And in fact, that's a pretty good sign of guidance. If you can say, well, I'm feeling guided to go here because I need blah, 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 and blah, 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 and I can get blah, 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 and I can, you know, and you have all the understanding, that's probably something you came up with in your own head. That's probably a plan because you have it all figured out. When you really don't know, that's more likely the guidance. Yeah. So, the way of God is always made clear in its own time according to the plan of the Holy Spirit. And the way of God is the way of your true desire. So it is the way of peace and of one will. The way of God and the plan of the Holy Spirit is the way of unfolding that must be. For who can stop the will of God when that will is also the one will of his true desire? All men have accepted the will of God, and so all men play their part in its unfolding. There are no obstacles to the truth, and the truth is that you are free and being led to the remembrance of your freedom. Every brother along your way is given that you may remember your truth. All things work together for God because that is the one true will of all things. So all this is really saying is, you know, if awakening is what you want, awakening is all that's happening. And that's all anything is for. There's not a single person that comes and speaks to you that isn't speaking to you in order to help you awaken. There isn't a single place that you are guided to go to that you aren't guided to go to except to help for your awakening. And that's the only thing that's happening. And, you know, like somebody recently said to me that they were really surprised that I was with my boyfriend Ron, because spirituality is so important to me, and it doesn't appear that he doesn't seem to have any interest in it, you know. And but see, it can't be that he somehow is not a part of my awakening. It's impossible. This says all men, right? All men are involved. It doesn't just say those who are consciously on the spiritual path. So if he's my partner, that's because he's the perfect partner for me in my awakening. He doesn't have to be on a spiritual path to be the perfect partner for me in my awakening. All men, all people are part of this.
Which is, everything is spiritual path, period.
Everything. That's really all that's going on here, no matter what it looks like.
That's what's so exciting to me, because if I start seeing that, you know, everyone I met is helping in my spiritual journey, look at how attractive and embracing everyone is to me, you know, because
yes,
that's what they are. They are gifts given to me for my awakening.
Yes.
And if we have this vision, we're going to be so loving, like you said at first, that's what you wanted to be, all love. Well, that's what we'll become.
Yes.
If we really see that all the time.
Yes. Yeah, if you accept everything as a gift, you're in a much better place than if you, you know, see everything as a curse. Everything's in my way. Everything's holding me back. You know, same things, right? But one way is helpful to you and one way isn't. It's all your attitude. Let's see. So we're ready for 32 to 41. Jesus was a symbol, and what he represented was your path to truth. For all that happened to Jesus will, in its own way, happen for you. All lessons that you have desired to learn shall be given you as you ask that they be given. This shall happen that you may learn that you are that which you have always been, and anything else that seemed to be was just a dream you asked to dream. All things are given you as you ask, since all things work together for God. So it says that everything that happened for Jesus in its own way will happen for us. But then it goes on to say, all lessons that we have desired to learn shall be given us. So it doesn't mean, for example, like, you know, I don't think anybody here would think this, but it doesn't mean, for example, that, you know, Jesus was crucified. It doesn't mean that you're going to be crucified. You know, Jesus was homeless. It doesn't mean that you're going to be homeless. But what it does mean is that everything that your, for lack of better words, your soul is desiring in order to ensure a full and complete awakening, everything that your soul is desiring is going to happen for you, so that you can have that full and complete awakening. So if there are tests that you feel that you need to put yourself through in order to make sure that, you know, something is no longer there, you're going to find your way to that test. And in fact, in John, which we skipped, John tells us that God doesn't test us. We're the ones that call the tests. You know, we're the ones that have this little thought or this little doubt, like, wow, I wonder if I really let go of that. You know, I need to be sure I let go of that. And because we want to check and make sure we let go of that, it may come around again. And then we go, oh, you know, I can see how I reacted this time. I know I did let go of that, or I know I still need to be doing something. But we're the ones that's calling our spiritual path to us. It's not God doing it to us. So that's pretty interesting, and that's exactly what Jesus did as well. Jesus would have called his spiritual path to him, you know, at a soul level, not a conscious thinking mind level, right?
I wanted to ask you.
Yes.
What did it say that you, for us to ask? There it is. All lessons that you have desired to learn shall be given to you as you ask that they be given. That has been a stumbling block for me, because I'm saying to myself, and I'm this evil or what, but anyway, well, you need to ask or you're not going to get it. And part of me says yes to that, and part of me says, I don't really have to ask.
Yeah.
I just, like, in other words, my wanting it or desiring it is a way of asking.
Yeah.
So do I have to sit there and verbalize it in my mind?
No. That's why I called it a soul rather than an intellectual mind. You know, even though I'm even using soul as a symbol, but it's something that's deeper that's actually doing the asking than this intellect. So the intellect wouldn't know what to ask for. The intellect might even ask for the one thing, the wrong things, you know. Or to be in a romantic relationship or to get out of a romantic relationship. You know, the intellectual mind doesn't really know, but there's a soul. I'm still using soul as a symbol, but there's a soul asking that happens. And that will happen pretty naturally, so you don't really have to worry about it. And in fact, that's why Jesus said in the Bible that your Father knows what you need before you ask. He was talking to the intellectual mind. You don't need to ask your Father for what you need. Well, how does your Father know? Because your soul's already asking. You know, your soul knows exactly what you need, and it knows exactly what to ask for. And so you can trust everything that comes to you was a part of your soul wish.
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. When you are looking at the world, back to 42 to 48, I think, nothing at all is separate. Separateness is the illusion. Separate wills and separate desires are all illusion. Anything that seems separate and in conflict is illusion in illusion's form. For all things are one and all things work together for God. There is no separate purpose. There only seems to be a separate way of understanding purpose, and even that is illusion. So what this is saying is if I, for example, was upset at one of you guys for something, what could I be upset at you for?
Not doing our homework.
Okay, for not remembering the assignment. That's a good one. I asked, did you guys remember the assignment? No. Next week I asked, do you guys remember the assignment? No. Okay, why the hell am I given assignments every week? If you guys, these assignments are supposed to, you know, so I get mad at you guys, okay? It appears when I'm getting mad at you, it appears that I have one will and you have another will. And that's why we have a conflict. I have a will for you to remember my assignments. And you probably have a will for me to shut up right now while I'm yelling at you, right? But what this is saying is the appearance that we have separate wills and that's why we're conflicting, that's only an appearance. That's only an illusion. The truth is my getting upset at you is helpful to your awakening, right? Now, I don't think this means, because I do think there's an arrogant ego way that the ego sometimes takes this on, and it does show up, unfortunately, in teachers, where some teachers will get mad at students and be mean to students and say, this is for your awakening. I don't think this is referring to a conscious level. Like if I was to get mad at you for not doing the homework, that's because I think I'm upset because I'm mad at you for not doing the homework. I'm not consciously trying to give you a lesson, right? But what Spirit says is that anger is coming out of me in order to be helpful to you. In fact, there's nothing that can happen that isn't there to be helpful to you. It doesn't mean the other person is conscious of it. And in fact, they have a lesson in it too. The truth is, there can be two lessons going on at the same time, right? But there is no such thing as a true conflict because everything has one purpose, to awaken you, right? In order to have a conflict, you have to have two purposes. And what this is saying is there's really no such thing as two purposes. There's only one purpose. So even the appearance of conflict is an illusion. It's not a conflict. It's in perfect harmony with your desire to awaken. And you can, and if you understand it that way, then when, you know, Regina starts yelling at you for not remembering the homework, you start looking at yourself. And you start looking at, you know, maybe one of you is feeling unworthy because you didn't do the homework, and you know, then that's bringing up your unworthiness. Maybe another one of you, the teacher, is falling off her pedestal. You know, different things could be going on with each of you, but you go in and you look at why you're upset. The truth is, if you had a perfectly healed mind, Regina could forget herself, and she could get into her ego, and she could yell at you for not doing the homework, and you would be totally at peace. So if Regina's yelling at you and you're not totally at peace, this is an opportunity for you to go in and find out what's in you. You know, the good news is that if we have a perfectly healed mind, nothing upsets us. So there's nothing in the world that we can blame for our upset. Every single time we're upset, it's because it's something in us that isn't healed. And so we can go inward and say, why is this upsetting me? And in that way, everything is a gift. Everything is helpful to you awakening. Nothing is out of harmony for your purpose, which means there's no real conflict. It's only the appearance of a conflict. Verses 49 to 52. When you are looking at the world and seeing conflict, you are looking through the eyes of illusion. During this time, illusion has been chosen by you. So if I'm yelling at you because you haven't done your homework, because you can't remember your homework, and you two are thinking, you know, what's up with Regina? My God, you know, I thought she didn't listen to her ego like that. What's that saying is that what you're doing in that moment is you're choosing illusion by seeing the whole thing that way. But if instead you say, oh, I notice how unworthy I feel. I need to go in and look at this. Why is this making me feel unworthy? What's going on here? Then you're not choosing, you're choosing healing. So you either choose healing or you choose illusion. The circumstance is the same, right? So again, starting at the top of 49 to 52, when you are looking at the world and seeing conflict, you are looking through the eyes of illusion. During this time, illusion has been chosen by you, but you are only looking at illusion, and you are not even looking at illusion as the illusion that it is, for all illusion is the expression of freedom, and conflict is not freedom. To see conflict is to see illusion through another layer of illusion, which you have chosen to experience. To see illusion as the expression of freedom is to see illusion as it truly is. So this is something that we talked about. You guys were out of town, and Dan, you just weren't here. but should I get mad at him for that? But when we looked at Acts chapter 10, we looked at how the whole world is an expression of freedom, and that's how Holy Spirit sees it. In fact, one of the things I used to really have a hard time with is I saw the Holy Spirit as good and the ego as bad. And so if I or somebody else was listening to Holy Spirit, I saw them as good. If I or somebody else was listening to ego, I saw them or myself as bad. And I was really caught up on that for a long time. And one thing that really helped me was Acts 10, because what Acts 10 taught me was Holy Spirit's view that we're the perfect, free Son of God. And we're perfectly free to choose to listen to Holy Spirit and equally perfectly free to listen to ego.
And
he
will get that.
And no, because freedom is what is valued more in the eyes of the Holy Spirit, just that freedom. And so Holy Spirit sees us no differently. The only reason that you could say that Holy Spirit wants us to wake up is because Holy Spirit understands our pain, that we don't really want this pain that we want. So it's like a favor to us to help us leave the pain and come back to the joy. But there's no judgment in that. You know, if we wanna listen to ego and get mad at everybody, we're totally free. And so if somebody else, if Regina is yelling at you because, you know, you didn't do your homework, right? Then you could just see that as this is her freedom. She, you know, if she wants to listen to her ego and get upset, she can. You know, that's her freedom. And if you can look at that honestly, you'll find there's no upset in you. You just allow her to have her upset right now, right? And so if you're choosing to be upset by her being upset, this just means that you are choosing illusion too. You're choosing the same ego she's choosing, and you're free to do that. But the question is that really what you want to do? How does that make you feel? You know, and is that the way you want to feel? Right? So everyone is free to choose ego. And if one of the big mistakes that we make in this path, especially, you know, in spiritual relationships, like where you're both on the spiritual path, I think Ron is a little easier for me because he's not. He's not consciously on the spiritual path, so I don't try to get him to watch his ego. You know? But if you're in a relationship with someone who is on the spiritual path, sometimes the mistake we make is trying to get the other one to watch their ego.
Yeah,
right?
That trap.
Yeah, that is a big trap. It's that, you know, they're free to be an ego whether they're on a spiritual path or not. It's, I only need to watch myself. I only need to accept the atonement for myself. My brother is free to be an ego today. Absolutely free. And for me, that's easy with Ron. And I think one reason it's easy is because there's a little recognition in me that he's never chosen to watch his ego. You know, it's, that's something he's trying to do. So I don't, you know, I never get involved there.
Yeah. I might mention that was the homework that we was when we saw anybody or any event happening, we would just say that person's freedom.
That's right.
What he's choosing to do, and that would give us the opportunity to get caught up. Because that was really good for me.
Yes. And you were going to say something, Jacqueline?
I was just going to say that that often masquerades for me as sadness. You know, I'm sad that somebody's not, you know, somebody, particularly somebody who's supposedly on the spiritual path, that they're not, you know?
Yeah, I went through that. I went through that when, especially when Debbie was living with us. And there were a couple other people in my life, too, who appeared stuck. You know, like they kept saying they wanted to heal, but yet they you know, it looked like nothing was happening. And I remember it was actually this time of year. It was around Christmas. It was in December, and I remember I was washing dishes, and I just felt so sad for them because they, you know, they were so stuck. And then I went, "Wait a minute! Wait a minute! I'm sad here. There's something wrong here." And I went within, and I asked for help, and I don't remember the specific answer that came then. Do you remember? I know I talked about it. But it was clear to me that was my ego leading me. It seemed compassionate, but it wasn't compassionate. It was my ego. What I've learned now that I, you know, a little further along than I was then, I do feel compassion for people, but I can feel compassion without feeling sadness. And I think maybe, at least for me, it took getting to a certain healed point before I understood that, because I thought that the compassion required the sadness. But there's a compassion that does happen. It's a real honest compassion and caring, but it does not in any way block your own joy. So the compassion plus sadness is still ego. God's compassion still has joy in it, still has love in it, still has faith and trust and all his wellness in it. And it's compassion too. Yeah. So... all right, so we just have a little bit more here to read at the bottom, sentence 7. This is why the Holy Spirit celebrates his invitation to meet with you within your dreams. The Holy Spirit celebrates your truth, which is your freedom, and he is grateful for it. I had a vision. It might have been when I was writing this. I kind of have a memory. It might have been when I was writing this, but I could also be wrong. But the vision... the way that I recall the vision, although it was a mystical experience, that was, you know, in a way I wasn't all there, but the way I recall it is that it lasted a long time, like 2 hours. And that what happened during this 2 hours is I kept being taken to different world scenes, although I don't remember them all. I didn't remember them all immediately after the vision. But I kept being taken to different world scenes that my mind would have judged, and was shown those scenes through Holy Spirit's eyes so I could see how Holy Spirit saw them. The only scene and each scene seemed to be progressively more bad, right? And the only scene that I remember is the very last scene. And the very last scene that we went to was a war. And we went to a city that had just been bombed, I would say, by the United States. It had just been bombed, and the bombers had just left. And so there were buildings that were burning, you know, and partially destroyed, partially standing. There were bodies in the streets, some of, you know, some dead, some still dead, but like blown apart, you know, like legs missing and stuff like that. There were injured people. There were mothers crying, looking for their children. It was just chaotic. It was, I mean, like it just happened, and it was awful, and that's how I perceived it was awful. And then what happened is we switched to Holy Spirit seeing. And when we switched to the way Holy Spirit sees, first of all, the form of the whole thing disappeared. And we were, it was actually formless. Like, I don't have anything to even report to you about what I was seeing. There's nothing to report. But in the formlessness, what I knew was that the image I had just seen of the war was created by us, by our minds, our believing, you know, all the attack thoughts that we believe, all of that created this war, right? But this is hard to explain. When I saw that with Holy Spirit, there was this deep, deep, joyous gratitude that we were so free that we could even make war. It's like we wouldn't be free if God said, you can do this and this and this, but I draw the line here. You're not allowed to have that experience. With Holy Spirit, there was just deep gratitude for perfect freedom. So that even the scene of war did not kill the joy in Holy Spirit's scene. Now, that doesn't mean Holy Spirit isn't perfectly willing to lead us to change the way we think. In fact, that's what Holy Spirit was doing by showing me this vision, right? Was helping me to change the way I think, by teaching me to let go of judgment of everything, even war, right? Because it's the judgment itself that creates those kinds of scenes. So when you let go of the judgment entirely, including the judgment of those kinds of scenes, you're taking away what makes them. It's kind of a catch-22. You know, people judge the war, not realizing that the judgment of the war is what makes the war, right? So learning to love absolute freedom, even the freedom to make war, you take away the judgment, and you could say you cease to be a part of the problem. Yeah. So we need an assignment. No judging this week. No, I'm having a little. Yeah.
That's our default. And that really helped me see how much I judge and yelled. So we might do that.
I was going to say, well, we just do that assignment again. You know, especially since they weren't here before, and it's a really good assignment. Yeah, it is. So why don't we do that one again? So your assignment this week is, no matter what happens, right? No matter what the people that you live with do, no matter what happens in your extended family, no matter what happens on the news, no matter what the lady at the grocery store says to you or what she says to her kid, or no matter what happens this week, you know, your judgment may fly first, and that's okay, but then try to remember that is the expression of freedom. And maybe we'll add to it, that is the expression of freedom, and there's nothing more valuable than perfect freedom. Let's learn to love it. That is the expression of freedom, and there is nothing more valuable than perfect freedom. And even if you don't do your assignment, then I'll say that is perfect freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.